Hey, everybody, it's Brian, and welcome to this episode of the Brutal Truth About Sales and Selling podcast. Here we are, kind of in the heart of vacation season, but I'm not taking any time off. I'm here to help you. Hey, I got a piece of housekeeping that I would like to make you aware of. We are now just about in the month of August of 2018. I'm celebrating 9 years of doing this podcast. Certainly the first few years were touch and go, but it's been just a great experience. But one of the things about starting a podcast 9 years ago was that there weren't many people to host podcasts, and I picked a company, and that company, I'm not sure how long they're going to be around. So what I've done is I put together a mirror podcast, this identical podcast on another hosting company. It's called The Brutal Truth. You'll probably see it in iTunes. The icon artwork is very not very different, but a little bit different. It's much more horizontal, and it doesn't have the maverickmethod.com label in it. What I'm suggesting you do is subscribe to that as well as this one, because one, I don't know how long they're going to be around. I don't know. They haven't been very stable. It's been going down, down, down. And I think it's just because their business model isn't working. And I've moved to the most stable, most well-known hosting company out there. And I started having the Mirror podcast about 3 or 4 months ago. So it has about 4, maybe 5 months of the content there. On the old one, if you're on the old one that has the maverickmethod.com in the bottom right-hand corner, what I would recommend doing is downloading all of the episodes that you ever want to hear, because I'm probably not going to move over everything, just because it's a ton of work. And people tend to go to the first 15, maybe 20. Some people used to go all the way back 9 years, but that's a lot of work. And it's just easier for you to download them all and then subscribe to both. I'll be posting identical content to both podcasts for the foreseeable future. I don't have any plans to turn the old one off, but I've had some stability and availability issues with them. So I want to make you aware of that and suggest you take action, because I've had people like, hey, it's not playing, you know, so there's no need for that. It's 2018. That's why I moved over, and they really kind of dropped the ball last year on me, and here it is, my business, and not being able to have people get access to the episodes wasn't making sense. Also, hey, I want to make sure that you're checking out Nudge and Pipe Drive. They both have the same coupon code, Brutal Truth. You get a free month of the professional version. You got to try it. I'm telling you, everybody's like, well, how do I find out icebreakers? What do I know who to focus on? How do I know who's in market? How do I keep track of all this stuff? How do I become a salespreneur? You got to have the tools and the capabilities that you own. I know you want to expense everything, and I don't blame you. You know, it's hard-earned money. Believe me, I get it. But you got to also think, hey, I'm a professional. I've got to have my own tools, my own capabilities, my own means of production. So check those out. Also, check out their content. They're producing incredible stuff. Nudge has a series on how people buy, and they have different personas. And what you find is it's nothing about what everyone's teaching you about the magic email and the magic cold call. It's all about connections, relationships, social proof, all of these things that I've been trying to converse to you, trying to communicate with you for a while now. Not like I know it all or anything. It's just that I share what works for me and what I see people doing wrong. And believe me, I did it wrong, and everyone's teaching how to do it wrong. All this fanatical this and fanatical that. Also, I've been dropping videos on LinkedIn. I'm going to start doing it probably 2 or 3 times, maybe every day during the week. It's just me walking around kind of answering questions, maybe a video type thing to like the Sales Questions podcast, which is blowing up. I've committed to doing that 5 days a week now. They're short, 5 to 8 minute type of Q&A. If you have any questions, just submit them. I don't promise to do all of them. I do the ones that I think are the most applicable to everybody, and I post it on there. So subscribe to the Sales Questions podcast. Today, we've got a great episode. I've got another career salesperson who's going to share his experience at both big companies and small companies. And now he's out there trying to help sales reps cut through the noise and get meetings to win deals. And we're just going to talk about, you know, why things don't work every time, all the time. And I think it's great to get someone else's perspective and really kind of share what's effective and what's working today and get away from this persona-based selling and this numbers game and start doing things smart. Because you can never get too smart. You can always work too hard, but you can never get too smart. Let's get into the interview. And at the end, I'll sum it up and I'll give you an update on the office hours and the training class and the prize that I'm offering in the month of August for you folks to kind of both teach you how to social sell and make a little money. Hey, David, thanks for joining us today. As a way of getting started, tell us about yourself.
Hey, no, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so my name is David Premer. I'm the founder and chief sales scientist. I know it's a made-up title at Cerebral Selling, but there's a reason for that. Let me explain. I started my career as a research scientist over 20 years ago and got into sales like most of us do by accident. You know, didn't know sales was a thing you can do. And I've kind of carried over a lot of the kind of the cerebral, scientific, kind of the asking why nature of my science career into selling. I've been a part of four amazing startups and growth companies. Three of those startups ended up getting acquired. One, which I helped start in 2008, was acquired by Salesforce, where I got to spend 5 amazing years learning how sales machines are built, both culturally and operationally at scale. And so in the second half of my career, as I call it, there's nothing that I can think of that I'd love to be doing more than sharing as much as I can about what I've learned and how I see the world of sales changing through cerebral selling, which is my my training practice. So that's what I do now full time. And it's amazing connecting with so many great companies and practitioners in a space that is both monetarily rewarding and existentially rewarding, that's changing all the time. So it's definitely an area where we need to keep learning and growing, and great to be a part of it.
Well, let's dig into that. What type of science did you study? What was the field?
Yeah, so I did an undergraduate degree in chemistry and atmospheric physics, and then I did a master's degree in chemical engineering, which, you know, like what the hell are you doing with that in sales?
Yeah.
But that's what I did. So it was a lot of chemistry, you know, computer modeling, meteorology, and ended up actually when I got into sales, you know, for people who are thinking, well, what's my entry point into sales? I got into sales as a solution engineer. And I was a solution engineer and managed a team of SEs for 8 years, which was a great foray from, you know, kind of the science world where I was doing a lot of coding and presenting and so on. But yeah, that was my background.
Yeah, I had a similar background, but more on the software side. Now, meteorology, I can certainly see how that would apply to sales. You know, no, seriously, where it's more of a heuristic. There is no equation, right? There's all these, you know, variables, known and unknown. And, you know, you put the big computers at it and they still kind of, you know, they can go a good half hour, maybe hour in advance, but it gets loose after that.
For sure. Well, there's lots of jokes around forecast accuracy, you know, being a meteorologist transitioning into sales. But it's funny. So when I was in my undergrad program, there was only 2 of us, ironically, at my university in that program. And the other guy is a good friend. His name is Chris Scott. And he went on to do graduate work in atmospheric science and then became – he is now today the chief meteorologist at the Weather Network here in Canada. So big shout out to Chris. And I had a chance to visit with Chris earlier this year, and we were just kind of catching up and talking about sales and meteorology. And I actually did not have a full appreciation for how similar they are, not just in terms of, you know, you have your data and your heuristics and you're making a prediction as to what's going to happen. Like, I'm forecasting sales. I don't know which deals are going to come in, which, you know, it's similar in that way. But there's also actually the similar context when you're doing discovery. So, for example, think about this. If you're listening to the weather and you're trying to figure out, you know, how meaningful that forecast is to you, well, let's say, for example, you're getting married next week, you know, and you're getting married outside. Well, then the forecast becomes very, very important. The weather forecast it is. Or if you're going on vacation to a certain spot, the weather forecast becomes very important. If you're just going to the office and going to work, then other than a little bit of, you know, discomfort if you have to trudge through the rain to get there, it doesn't really make too much of a difference. And so it's the same thing when we're selling our, you know, products and solutions and so on. What it means to every customer is going to be different. And the way, you know, my, you know, Chris, you know, where he talks about, hey, look, I, you know, get up and sell, I sell the weather every day. You know, I sell the weather, and how you interpret my forecast and what it means to you plays a big part in how you feel about the service I provide. And I actually feel it's quite similar in the B2B software world.
I think it's even deeper than that, because if you look at the weather, you've got you know, the air pressure, you've got you know, the time of year, you've got you know, things, the moon, all of these variables. And if you look at a large complex sale, you got all these players, and you know, the forecast is one thing, but the trying to understand what to do next, what's going to happen, what they're going to care about, those pretty cerebral stuff. And I think too many salespeople, you know, use their presentation, their demo, and then their proposal is really the three pillars of their stool, you know,
right.
Which usually isn't enough.
It's true. Well, I actually find, you know, when you think about, I think about modern selling. And, you know, one of the things we were chatting about a little earlier is, like, what's the difference between your A players and your B players and your very experienced people and maybe your newer folks? And I find in sales, we have this concept of the playbook. It's like, okay, here's the product, and here's the deck, and here's the pitch, and here's how to deliver it, and here's the discovery questions you want to ask to, you know, kind of understand, you know, the customer's need. And what happens is a lot of people will take those tools and they'll just go out and they'll deliver them, or they will use them in a very kind of robotic, matter-of-fact way with not a lot of finesse. And this is not a knock on, you know, on people that do it, but it's just these are the tools that we give them. And I feel like the difference between like the A's and the B's and the novices and the more advanced is kind of how they use them, how they use the data, the tools to kind of weave that into a conversation. You know, you hear that all the time in discovery, where oftentimes, you know, with the customers I work with, the clients I work with, they say, look, sometimes discovery kind of feels like a polite interrogation, right? Like, here's a list of questions, you will now answer them. And the difference is like how you take the tools that you have and, you know, use them in a kind of a very fluid, harmonious, conversational way. And I feel like that's where like the big gap is.
And that's it. Even with, if you listen to the discussions about using supercomputers to play chess against the grandmasters. What always wins is if you have a grandmaster working with the computer against the other grandmaster, because there is this science and art of selling. And you get a lot of people on the podcast that are on one side or the other. You got the practitioners who can't really articulate what they do, but it works for them. And then you get the people on the social science side that, oh, no, it's this, and this. You know, and it's like, well, it's a little bit of both, you know. And weather is like that, because how, if it was pure science, we wouldn't need a weatherman, right, or a weatherwoman, because a computer could do it.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, people also appreciate context. So it's funny that people still tune in, and this is a thing, because you think about, why do we still have people on the TV reading weather when I can just look at my phone or ask Siri or, you know, Alexa or whatever, and they will give me all the same information? Because people like the context. And I feel that, you know, I don't know if this is where we're going to pivot, but, you know, one of the reasons why I'm such a big fan of advocacy, you know, when it relates to selling, is because with so many solutions on the market and the barrier of entry is so low, there's a million places I can get the weather, for example, you know, never mind a piece of marketing automation software, that in order to make, it's hard for me to make sense of it. I don't know which information is true, real, authentic. And so what I default to is the trusted opinion of someone like me. And that's where we're all searching for context. That's why we look on G2 Crowd and TripAdvisor. Like, we just want to know what people like us think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like that's one of the reasons why people still tune into the weather. It's amazing that we're talking about weather so much on this podcast. This is amazing. But the idea that people still tune into the weather because they want someone to put it into context for them. I trust Chris Scott. I trust Brian Burns. I trust these people because they're helping develop, you know, context. And if, and I'd say like that, that dialogue, that insight, that that perspective in the hands of a skilled practitioner, someone who has the best interests of their clients in mind as well, is super powerful. And that's why I feel sales and B2B and in-person selling is still, you know, highly relevant in the age of, you know, apps and technology and review sites and so on.
Well, let's dig more into your work and how you have applied science to selling, because you probably sold more than you've researched from a pure researcher standpoint. But I'm sure you felt like a researcher, you know, doing it at times. It's certainly when things didn't happen the way you wanted, or you were surprised, or things got delayed or lost.
Well, it's true. You know, oftentimes we think in sales, and as a seller, we're like, well, we're, you know, well positioned. We're in the Gartner Magic Quadrant. We have a great product. It's, you know, the price is right. We've been able to put together a compelling ROI, and yet our client still doesn't buy from us. We're like, that doesn't make sense. And we're like all perplexed. And it's interesting as you
talk, called no decision, right?
No decision. Yeah. Well, it's true. You know, and the thing I talk a lot about is this, like, who's the real enemy? The enemy is not your competitor. I mean, you'd be so lucky as to lose to your competitor. And I'm sure that you do, but all the data and the research that I have says that we lose to dead no decision orders of magnitude more than we lose to a competitor. And, you know, when I think about, to your point, like the art and the science, yes, you know, I have a science background and, you know, but what I tell my clients is, I mean, yeah, like sales is definitely not all science. There's definitely an art, and even science isn't all science, as we've been talking about with, you know, weather prediction. But, you know, the thing that unites both the art and the science is this concept of why. And one of the things I talk a lot about is this idea of unconscious selling. And not like unscrupulous or like, you know, unethical selling, unconscious selling, meaning we go out, as I mentioned earlier, with these playbooks and we execute, you know, questions and pitches and decks and so on. And sometimes the things that we do work and sometimes they don't work. And sometimes they might work on one client and on another. And that's all fine. But the problem is that if we don't understand why they worked or why they didn't work, then as a good seller, we are missing out on a huge opportunity to double down on the things that are going to you know, yield the best results for us. And as an unconsciously bad seller, if you're a bad seller and you're using tactics that don't work all the time, then not only are you not achieving the business result you were hoping for, but you're ruining it for everyone else. And you're creating a negative, continuing to propagate a negative perception of our profession. And so that's it. So when I think about like the why. So for example, if you are doing, let's say you're doing a pitch, right, and you're using a scientific principle of polarization, you know, this idea that, hey, look, if I can be very controversial in my, you know, the pitch of my product, it will help people, you know, understand what I do a lot quicker. That is a scientific principle. Okay, so there's the science there. At the same time, and that's the why. Oh, why did that message land? Oh, because I use this very polarizing, you know, psychological principle. You know, on the flip side, I might say something that pisses the customer off or makes the customer feel uncomfortable, not because of the words that I used, but because I just kept, you know, the polite interrogation. I just kept, you know, question after question asking the customer. They're like, well, this doesn't feel like a conversation. This feels like an interrogation. And you're not a doctor. Who are you to come and start asking me all these questions? And so that is the art. You know, it's not the words that are the problem. It's how you use them. Yeah. But both point back to this concept of why. You know, the customer was happy because you used a polarizing statement, which was science. They were unhappy because you politely interrogated them, which is the art. But they all come back to the why.
Well, let's dig into it. When you say why do they care? Why would they be interested? Why would they take action? When you say why, how do you apply it?
Yeah, like when I think about the interaction between a seller and the buyer and the reaction that, let's say, a buyer can have to a seller. The seller might say something that the buyer likes and helps the buyer understand exactly how the seller could add value. Yeah. And that's what I mean by the why. Like, why did that message land?
Contextually. And
why why did that work or why did it not work? And the problem is the more we arm ourselves up with decks and pitches and, you know, discovery questions – and and the magic quadrants and, you know, the customer should want to buy from us, right? This seems very reasonable. The more we kind of insulate ourselves and we get away from the why.
It's, yeah, when you treat everybody as equal, as clones, That's obviously wrong. If you've ever watched Sacha Baron Cohen, you know, he's one person's rolling on the floor laughing and the other person's walking out. You know, so it's like, is he funny? Yeah, to many people. Is he offensive? To a couple people. So you have to, you know, use that judgment call pretty carefully when you're doing a kind of a powerful thing.
Well, it's true. And he's not for everyone. He's not for everyone. And that's okay. And I think, you know, he's very secure in what he does. And I feel like, especially in sales, like we have to be secure as well. Like the way I teach sales really resonates for my clients. And I feel, you know, kind of where the state of modern selling is going. But there's other sales trainers out there who take a different approach. And some clients love it and some don't. And that's okay. I think there's room for everyone. You need to find, and there's lots of different sellers out there, and every seller has their own unique approach and superpower that may or may not work in you know, their industry. And so I think we're all kind of on this quest, trying to find our tribe and trying to find the way that works, you know, for us.
And what's a perfect match for you and what you teach?
In terms of the type of client or the type of...
Type of client, type of product, where you know, hey, I can help you, or... And it's not marginal at all. It's your A-level, perfect client.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, it's interesting. All of the companies that I've worked at were B2B technology companies, you know, software companies. And so, and I've been, you know, sales rep number one at a company. I've been there right at the, you know, the ground level. And you know, the first startup I was at, you know, we started, I was employee number 20. We grew up to 700 employees over, you know, the course of 8 years. We did an IPO 3 years into the business. We were acquired 7 years later. So, you know, I've seen the spectrum, and, you know, I love working with those growth companies. And so, like, most of my clients tend to be, you know, technology companies that are kind of they're in the stage where they already have a sales team. They're already looking to ramp up, and, you know, and the companies could be, you know, 100 to 500. I have companies that are in the thousands of employees. But what's really interesting is I'm finding that I'm getting more calls from, you know, I would say mainstream companies, forestry companies, retailers, university admissions departments. And in fact, even though my content is sales, quote, I use sales in air quotes, focused, I'm finding that sometimes maybe about 40% of the people that are sitting in the room with me are customer success, their support, their marketing, their product, because people have come to the realization that everything is in sales. Everything is sales. And in every organization, there's what I call kind of the sales supply chain. So, you know, marketing comes up with a message and then sales has to deliver it and then CS has to make good on it. And oftentimes that supply chain is broken, where sales is saying to marketing, you don't know what's going on in, you know, in the real world here in front of the clients. And CS is saying, hold on a second, I just talked to this customer and, you know, they were under a complete misapprehension of what the heck our product did because the salesperson told them this, that, and the other. So anyway, so I work with a lot of clients on that sales supply chain. And again, a lot of B2B technology, but certainly branching out and working with a lot of mainstream companies who realize that, you know, everything is sales.
And what's your magic sauce as far as, like, what do you teach them? Not the exact thing, but the focus area where when you leave, they're much better off.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, a lot of times the organizations I work with are at a point where they're doing stuff and some stuff is working and some stuff isn't. But again, it comes back to that my value proposition is turning people from unconscious into conscious sellers, okay. Meaning you understand why you're doing what you're doing and you have the tools to understand, you know, if it's working or not. So I do deliver, you know, tactical, you know, content and advice, like here's how to, you know, pitch your message in a way that will deeply resonate more so than talking about the nuts and bolts of what it is. So we'll do that. You know, we talk about discovery, like how do you get people to tell you things that they don't want to tell you? And rightly so, right? You haven't earned anything. How do you get them to tell you things? A lot of discovery tends to be focused on, like, what questions should I ask? And that's important, but how do you get people to tell you things? And so my big focus is kind of harmonizing this, you know, tactical, like, here's some great scientific principles that work with kind of the art. Here's how you use them, and here's how you measure their effectiveness so that you can iterate and become better and better and learn as you go so that you develop into a conscious seller.
Yeah, because that sounds a lot like judgment. I don't mean judgment in the pejorative term of judging somebody. I mean judgment in the sense of being able to judge when to use what and how to use it.
It's true. I mean, I think a lot of it goes back to this idea of emotional intelligence as well. And I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with emotional intelligence. And you know, it's just this idea that if we can observe and interpret and intercept feelings in ourselves and others, and make no mistake, I actually, for a science guy, I talk a lot about feelings because we all buy based on emotion and then later justify with logic. And that's one of the things that I do a lot of, you know, in every sense, you know, negotiation and messaging. And so I inject a lot of that into my training. And the great thing about that kind of emotional awareness is that you can learn it. And oftentimes when we teach it and people have this, you know, kind of aha moment, they're like, oh my gosh, yes, that's why the customer got pissed off when I, you know, said it that way. You know, we can increase people's emotional awareness. The challenge is most of us are not emotionally aware, and yet most high performers are. So there's definitely an element of emotional awareness about how we make customers feel and why they buy things and why they don't. And that's kind of all weaved into like the tactical approach to selling.
Well, I think we're all very emotionally aware of our emotions and oblivious to others. I think that's the problem.
You know, not always, you know, because most of us tend to react, you know, you know, people say things and we react and, you know, some customer says, oh, that's too expensive. We're like, oh, too expensive. Okay. You know, how can I make that cheaper for you? And, you know, we react without pausing. And I think, you know, too much of selling is just, you know, reactive. And a lot of the literature talks about, you know, just slow down, take a breath. You know, don't say something that, you know, you're not going to regret, but that doesn't move the ball forward in the right direction. Because as I've learned, you know, both in terms of the research and as being a practitioner, the line between success and failure is very fine. You know, it's not just the words, it's how you use them. Right.
And it comes back to your why. Instead of handling that objection, what you should ask yourself is, why are they asking that? Are they filling space? Do they not know? I've had people tell me it's too expensive without even knowing the price.
Right. Well, that's you know, I had a chat with John Barrows a few months ago. We talked about this idea because I wrote an article and it was called, it's on my website. It's called The Ultimate Objection Handling Guide. I apologize for the, you know, the bravado of the title, but the idea was just really about intent. When someone says it's too expensive, you know, what do they mean? And here's a fun little exercise. Suppose that your significant other says to you, you know, hey, honey, let's go out to this restaurant. There's this great new restaurant I heard of. I want to go there on Saturday night. And you don't want to go. Okay. There's various different levels of you don't want to go. And think about all of the different objections you could raise to your significant other that all say, I don't want to go, to various levels. So, you know, for example, you could say, I heard it's hard to get to. Do you have the instructions? Which is a very kind of, you know, minor objection.
Yeah.
You know, or you could say, I heard that they were shut down last week because of a rat infestation. Right?
Yep.
Those are two very – they both say I don't want to go, but they're two different intents. What is the intent of one versus the intent of another? So when someone says it's too expensive, is it – do they really mean – you know, I have this budget constraint. Can you help me through this constraint? Or does it mean I will never buy your stupid product, even though I don't know how much it costs? And I'm just saying it's too expensive as kind of like the red herring, right? You don't know. So that's the whole thing. Exactly what you said. You got to find out what's the root intent.
And that's it. And I think this is, it's probably the number one thing that I see holding salespeople back is that they're not that empathy, that being able to put themselves in the other person's position, the inquisitiveness, the curiosity of understanding what's really behind that person. I think what we're taught is all about us pushing something on people. And I think we've kind of gone a little bit mad with it right now, with everyone trying to get 15 minutes of time that's all about them. And it's counterproductive instead of productive. And I think that emotional intelligence is, you know, it's not taught, it's not encouraged, it's discouraged almost. And we want to be machines. We want to hire machines, and we want them to sell like machines.
Yeah, I mean, as a VP, so I had this moment of, here's like a little introspection. I had this moment of reckoning a couple of years ago, and you know, as a VP of sales at a, you know, a software company, and you have month ends and quarter ends, and you got to make the number, and you know, a very transparent success metric. There's always a hustle that happens at the end of a particular, you know, period, the end of the month, end of the quarter, and we tell our reps to go out and like make the calls and hustle, hustle, hustle. And you know, essentially what we're in a lot of instances translating that into is, I want you to go and bother our customers until they buy something from us,
yeah.
You know, because it's our timeline. And we've all kind of been guilty of that in the sales leadership, but like, let's ask ourselves, like, would that stuff work on me? When I was at Salesforce, I had a desk phone that I never answered. I only answered it when it was an internal number and I could see who was calling, because if it was someone externally, they were trying to sell me something, it was a recruiter, someone trying to waste my time. And so, and yet, I was telling my reps to do the exact same thing.
Well,
and
yeah.
You know, I was advocating for tactics that would never work on me. And that's what I, when I think about empathy, that's where it all comes together. It's like, okay, if you're using tactics, if you're running out there with your playbook, as you said, and you're, you know, you got your deck and your pitch, and you're like running and gunning, and you're doing all these things that would never work on you, then you are not executing with emotional intelligence. You are not executing with empathy. And why would someone want to buy something from you when you wouldn't buy it from yourself?
And 100% agree. And then what do the sales managers do when it doesn't work? One of two things. They either fire the rep or they say, do twice as much.
Right. Yes.
You know, so, and then all of a sudden, then you got GDPR all of a sudden, right? It's like, that didn't come about because people were doing the right thing.
That's exactly right. Well, so that's a great example. So now we have to, you know, we have to try a different way. Well, that's, you know, that lane is blocked. And yeah, it's becoming, and that's actually the fun thing about sales is that, you know, you've been in sales a long time, so have I. It's changed a lot. It's changed a lot. Like the first software company I worked at like 20 years ago, yeah, it was one of the first web-based workforce management solutions, which was great. But there was no G2 crowd. There was no Trust Radius. There was no, you couldn't Google the name of our company and find reviews and Glassdoor insights and yeah. All that stuff didn't exist. And so the information parity that exists today is a huge game changer. And now the rules are changing even more. Basically, the government is saying in the UK and the Europe, like, you can't bother people anymore.
Right. The harassment approach, which everyone's been taught and rewarded, and it works in very certain isolated cases that we're not talking about. You know, that is dead. I mean, either dead, dying, or illegal.
Right.
You know, hey, this has been a great conversation. Where do people go to learn about your work, connect with you, and get to know you?
Yeah, I mean, the best thing to do is go to my website, cerebralselling.com. All my content I give away for free. So you don't have to register for anything. It's not gated. If you want to sign up and subscribe, I send out a weekly email with updates. But that's the best place. And there you can find the blog, which has a whole ton of articles organized into various different topics, as well as a number of resources, including videos. I have a YouTube channel where I regularly publish quick 2-3 minute video tips, again, organized into popular topics like discovery and messaging and negotiation and so on. So that's the best way. You know, if you're interested in any of, you know, the training that I offer, I have some.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed that. I also want to make sure you're checking out Discover.org. They're producing great content, great research, and great webinars. I'm going to start working with them more deeply on their content and getting it out to you. Learning about the value of strong, clean data. We waste so much time trying to get the right contact information, trying to determine what they care about, who's in market, what the org chart looks like. It's just exhausting. And we've got to focus our time on the ones that are going to close. I did a video. I kind of liked it. It was titled, Is Pipeline the Problem or the Solution? Now, we all want great pipeline. But we don't want to just manufacture pipeline just because our company wants 3X in pipe. What they mean is they want 3X of real interested people at some stage of the investigation sales process in the pipeline. But the noise, it gets like telephone. So it comes down from Mount High to do that. So what does everybody do? They put in 300% of quota in their pipeline. So their manager gets off their back so that they can do their job. I get it totally. I've seen this at, you know, smallest of companies, the largest of companies. Everyone plays the game, you know, and as soon as you're playing the wrong game, the inside game, you have to play it. There's no not playing it. I fought it my whole career. And, you know, most of the time I got away with it because I was closing deals. Today, you know, with the dashboards and everything, people's focus is on the wrong thing. And the automation of stupidity has peaked. So we all have to play it. But the thing is, if you start putting stuff in there that isn't either really qualified, a real match, or any real interest, any hope whatsoever of closing, then all of a sudden you have to administrate it. You have to update it. You have to show evidence of action against it. And guess what that is? That's time. Time is our most critical resource in sales. Think about it. If you had, you know, more time, you could sell more. That is the gating factor, most likely, in you making more money. So if you're wasting time on deals that aren't going to close, it's just dangerous. So I don't know why I brought that up. Other than, hey, check out my YouTube channel. I'm putting out the videos, all the walk around videos are putting up there. If you're not a YouTuber, you can check the same ones out on Instagram, Brian G. Burns on Instagram. Right there, you can get a little 2-minute bit of knowledge or some crazy guy walking around his neighborhood talking into a camera type action. Also, this month of August, I've got a prize. I'm moving it up to $200 to as a reward and a thank you for the person who gets the most comments on their share of the podcast, meaning the podcast share is a screenshot of the podcast artwork. As you listen to it, just do the little screenshot. If you don't know how to do that, get on YouTube with the camera that, or the phone that you have. Really quick. It's a two-key thing on the iPhone. I don't know what it is on the Android. But you save that to your camera roll, and then you share it on LinkedIn and start tagging people and commenting. I'll comment on it, share it, tag it, all that stuff, help you out as much as possible. And on the last day of August, I'll count up the number of comments, and the one who has the most, I will give you a $200 Amazon gift card. So you have to be able to accept that, whatever that means in the country and locale that you are. And it's I do that because it's the easiest way to reward you, not because, well, I am an Amazon fan, but anyways, and what it also teaches you is how to leverage LinkedIn as a way of connecting and engaging with people. Imagine that, connecting and engaging people. Imagine if that was part of our job. Wait a second, he's on to something here. What is he talking about? I cold call all day. And sorry, there's just no evidence if you start cold calling and telling them about the podcast. So the idea is to thank you for sharing it, because you guys and gals are my sales force. That's how podcasts really become interesting, is you talking about them. Nothing else really seems to work. It seems like you're either into podcasts or not. So if you can tell your friends, just tag a bunch of salespeople. Tell them you'll take them out for drinks. Tell them you'll buy them a book, whatever. I appreciate that. Make sure you're checking out the show notes, connecting up with me on LinkedIn. And if you see some of my content on LinkedIn, I'm posting a funny video once a day. I'm going to start to move it to the Brutal Truth company page, the LinkedIn company page. So if you see that, go by. I'd appreciate a little thumbs up or a comment to kind of lighten up your day, trying to put a little sales humor out there every day. That's it. Make sure you're also subscribing to the B2B Revenue Leadership Podcast and the Sales Questions Podcast. And yeah, I started a career podcast. I just want to connect with people, because what I'm seeing is so many people are just struggling. It's 80% career and 20% execution. So you got to get into the right industry and the right job for you. So I'm going to kind of help people. I'm going to show you roadblocks. potholes, and express lanes to what I see working out there today. Thanks for listening.